Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
To ease epic suffering, make the delivery of aid easier and safer, and facilitate the release of hostages, I reiterate my appeal for an immediate humanitarian ceasefire.
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres calls again for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. But Israel, with the backing of the United States, has rejected the call and is continuing its bombardment for a 19th day. The Palestinian death toll has now topped 6,500, including 2,700 children.
I'm telling you, we were at home when suddenly we found what seemed like a barrel bomb. This was no ordinary rocket. We haven't heard of anything like it before. As you can see, everything is gone. Innocent people died, including children and women. This is Israel's goal, to kill the innocent and women and children.
We'll go to the occupied West Bank to speak with Amnesty International's researcher on Israel and the occupied territories. We'll also talk to the Pulitzer Prize-winning author Viet Thanh Nguyen, author of the new memoir A Man of Two Faces. Last week, a major cultural institution in New York, 92NY, formerly the 92nd Street Y, canceled an event with him after he signed an open letter calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. Plus, we look at how U.S. foreign policy toward Latin America is fueling historic numbers of asylum seekers. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.N. agency serving Palestinians, UNRWA, warned it would have to stop its life-saving operations in Gaza by tonight unless it receives more fuel. The humanitarian situation in Gaza has reached catastrophic levels, with hospitals shutting down, others cutting back critical services amidst the lack of fuel and supplies. At the Indonesian hospital in northern Gaza, staff resorted to using smartphone lights to see in the darkness as the hospital was forced to switch off power in all but a few parts of the building. The nonstop Israeli bombardment of Gaza continues. On Tuesday, a father in Khan Yunis carried the body of his young daughter in his arms after she was killed in an Israeli airstrike on their home.
I don't want to let her go. This is my daughter. I want as much time with her as I have before we bury her. They wanted to cover her face, but I told them no, we do not cover the faces of martyrs. The martyr's face is never covered. The martyr's face is never covered.
The Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza says over 6,500 people have been killed since October 7th. The 1.4 million internally displaced Gazans, representing over half the total population of Gaza, are facing increasing rates of disease due to overcrowding, poor sanitation, and lack of essentials like food and clean water.
At night, it's cold, and there aren't enough blankets for everyone. There is sand right beneath us. The children are all sick, some coughing, some have runny noses, some have fevers at night. Where are the rights of our children? Where are our human rights?
Israel appears poised to further escalate its attack on civilians, as its army chief says it's ready for ground operation. The U.S. has sent top military commanders to advise Israel on its assault, including Marine Corps Lieutenant General James Glynn, who led U.S. forces in its failed operations in Iraq, in Fallujah in particular. A war monitor said Israeli strikes hit Syria's Aleppo airport today in the fourth such attack over the past 2 weeks as fears mount of a wider regional conflict. Meanwhile, Israel's lashing out at the UN after Secretary General Antonio Guterres said it was guilty of clear violations of international humanitarian law and that the October 7th Hamas attack in Israel, quote, did not happen in a vacuum, unquote. The Israeli envoy to the UN demanded Guterres resign over the comments, as Israel has reportedly refused a visa to UN Humanitarian Affairs Chief Martin Griffiths to, quote, teach them a lesson. Here in the U.S., activists and voters continue to pressure lawmakers to call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. On Tuesday, a group of Christian, Jewish, and Muslim faith leaders and activists held a pray-in at House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries' D.C. office. This is Rabbi Alyssa Wise.
Overstate the crisis. Like, it is truly catastrophic on every level. Over 2,000 children have been killed, and it's being done in the name of the Jewish people. And the message of Judaism is one of life. The most sacred obligation in Jewish tradition is pikuach nefesh, which is saving a life. It trumps every other law.
Also on Tuesday, protesters in the Bronx rallied to demand an end to unchecked U.S. military support for Israel. The protests started in front of the office of Congressmember Richie Torres, a staunch ally with Israel, whom activists accuse of complicity in genocide against Palestinians, they said. In Cleveland, Ohio, the Council on American-Islamic Relations, or CARE, is calling for a car ramming of a Palestinian-American man to be investigated as a hate crime. The 20-year-old victim has been hospitalized. The driver reportedly shouted, "Kill all Palestinians and long live Israel," before hitting him with his car. The University of Vermont canceled an in-person event this week featuring prominent Palestinian poet and journalist Mohammed El-Kurd, citing safety concerns. The move comes as Palestinian Americans and allies on college campuses across the U.S. are sounding the alarm over increasing suppression of their voices. In news from Washington, D.C., House Republicans nominated ultra-conservative Louisiana Congressmember and Trump ally Mike Johnson as their fourth pick for House Speaker. The news came late Tuesday after another chaotic day that saw the majority whip Tom Emmer nominated for the job, only to drop his bid just hours later. Emmer, a more moderate Republican, failed to gain the support of the far-right flank of his party, as well as Trump, who blasted him on social media and on a call with GOP lawmakers. Trump reportedly declared, "I killed him," after Emmer's withdrawal. The Minnesota lawmaker voted in favor of same-sex marriage rights and for the certification of Biden's 2020 win. The House has been without a speaker for over 3 weeks following Kevin McCarthy's ouster. In Georgia, Jenna Ellis, Donald Trump's former lawyer and co-defendant in Fulton County's racketeering case, pleaded guilty to conspiring to overturn Trump's 2020 election loss. Ellis became the third former Trump lawyer to plead guilty and agree to cooperate with prosecutors following Kenneth Chesbro and Sidney Powell last week. Jenna Ellis tearfully addressed in Atlanta court Tuesday.
In the frenetic pace of attempting to raise challenges to the election in several states, including Georgia, I failed to do my due diligence. I believe in and I value election integrity. If I knew then what I know now, I would have declined to represent Donald Trump.
Jenna Ellis was sentenced to 5 years of probation, a fine of $5,000, and 100 hours of community service. She'll also write a letter of apology to the state of Georgia. Here in New York, Michael Cohen testified in Trump's civil fraud trial that his former boss instructed him to inflate the value of his assets, quote, based upon a number that Trump arbitrarily elected. Michael Cohen, Trump's one-time fixer and lawyer, said he would reverse engineer financial data to reach, quote, whatever number Trump told us. Cohen took the stand as Trump watched on just feet away. Meanwhile, ABC News is reporting former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows testified at least three times to a federal grand jury after he was given immunity in Special Counsel Jack Smith's investigation into Trump's efforts to overturn the 2020 election. Meadows reportedly testified Trump was being dishonest with Americans and that Meadows did not believe the election fraud claims were true. 41 states and the District of Columbia have sued Meta, the parent company of Facebook and Instagram, accusing the social media giant of knowingly promoting addictive features that harm the mental health of young people. The lawsuit says Meta has contributed to a mental health crisis in the United States and has violated a range of state consumer protection statutes, including a child privacy law that prohibits companies from collecting personal data of children under the age of 13 without parental consent. This is plaintiff New Jersey Attorney General Matt Plotkin.
We know that kids were and are being induced by Meta's Instagram and Facebook platforms to spend hours upon hours scrolling and being subjected to images and words that exacerbate a number of health and social issues, including body image, eating disorders, anxiety, loneliness, depression, and envy. Meta knew what they were doing.
Hurricane Otis made landfall on Mexico's southern Pacific coast early this morning as a historic Category 5 storm, unleashing dangerously high winds and torrential rains. Officials have warned of potential catastrophic and life-threatening conditions, including landslides and floods in the town of Acapulco and surrounding areas. In related news, thousands of people were displaced in southeastern Yemen as Cyclone Tej triggered rare downpours. Severe cyclones are nearly unprecedented in the region, but warming ocean temperatures due to the climate crisis have made them more likely. The Guardian reports Tej is only the second such storm to make landfall in Yemen in recorded history. And women and non-binary people across Iceland held a 24-hour strike Tuesday to highlight the gender pay gap and gender-based violence. It was the seventh countrywide strike since the movement started in 1975. Though Iceland has topped the World Economic Forum's gender gap report for 14 straight years, researchers say 40% of women will still experience gender-based discrimination and sexual violence. Yesterday's work stoppage, led by trade unions, affected all industries, from schools to the highest echelons of government, with Prime Minister Katrín Jakobsdóttir also participating in the strike. This is Agriculture Minister Svandís Svavarsdóttir.
It's about gender equality. We've been fighting for it for decades, and this day is very special for us, for women in Iceland, because we all skipped work 48 years ago, and we are doing it again today, because the gap is still there, and we're fighting against it.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Coming up, we go to Ramallah in the Israeli-occupied West Bank. Stay with us.
جبهاوين ويا محلى قريهم يوم الشدايد اول ما تلاقيهم
Revolution, don't forget my comrades. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
The death toll in Gaza has topped 6,500 as Israel continues to bombard this besieged territory for a 19th day. According to Palestinian health authorities, the dead include 2,700 children. Israel, with the backing of the United States, has rejected calls for a ceasefire. On Tuesday, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres addressed the UN Security Council and called for a ceasefire.
It is important to also recognize the attacks by Hamas did not happen in a vacuum. The Palestinian people have been subjected to 56 years of suffocating occupation. They have seen their land steadily devoured by settlements and plagued by violence, their economy stifled, their people displaced, and their homes demolished. Their hopes for a political solution to their plight have been vanishing. But the grievances of the Palestinian people cannot justify the appalling attacks by Hamas. And those appalling attacks cannot justify the collective punishment of the Palestinian people.
Israel condemned Guterres' comments and has vowed to stop issuing visas to UN representatives. Israel's ambassador to the UN is also calling for Guterres' resignation. This all comes as the humanitarian situation in Gaza grows worse by the hour, as dwindling fuel supplies could soon force the closure of all hospitals in the territory. Israel's also continuing to carry out attacks in the occupied West Bank. An Israeli drone strike on the Jenin refugee camp has killed at least 3 Palestinians. Israeli security forces and settlers have killed at least 100 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank since October 7th. And even before that, this was the deadliest year for Palestinians, at least 1 killed a day in the West Bank. Meanwhile, the number of Palestinians jailed by Israel has doubled over the past 2 weeks, from about 5,000 to 10,000. In other developments, the prime minister of Qatar says he hopes there'll be a breakthrough soon on the Israeli hostages being held by Gaza. Hamas and other groups are believed to be holding about 220 people seized on October 7th in the Hamas attack that left around 1,400 people dead in Israel. We begin today's show in Ramallah, in the occupied West Bank, where we're joined by Budur Hassan, Amnesty International researcher on Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories. Amnesty International published a report last week headlined, "Damning Evidence of War Crimes as Israeli Attacks Wipe Out Entire Families in Gaza." Budur, welcome back to Democracy Now! Can you lay out your findings?
Hello, Amy, to you, to Juan, and to all listeners and viewers. With the help of our field worker who is based in Gaza and testimonies that we gathered from witnesses, victims, and relatives, in addition to open source evidence and photographs examined by our evidence lab team, we found out that Israeli forces carried out indiscriminate attacks, killing and injuring civilians, and in some cases that we documented and that barely scratched the surface of the horror that is unfolding in Gaza. Entire families were wiped out during this bombing campaigns, which is only escalating. In addition to indiscriminate attacks by Israeli forces, we also documented the ongoing use of collective punishment, which is a war crime, that even where Israel alleged that there was a military target, a legitimate military target, the attacks failed to abide by the principle of proportionality. And just, Amy, to go further, because we keep hearing numbers, and sometimes we may be desensitized and even inured to the extent of horror that we are witnessing, that behind each of these numbers there are stories. So as part of our work, Amnesty International researchers have been listening to testimonies of people in Gaza, of victims, talking directly to people over the phone. And when we talk to people, for example, we talk to Tahir Azaizi, who lost 26 members of his family. All of his family were killed in an Israeli airstrike in Deir al-Balah. Tahir Azaizi's 2 children, aged 8 and 6, were among those killed. His mother, his father, his brothers, his nieces, everyone of his family. And when we talked to him, he simply said, "You know, in my heart, there is no room for all of this." And he started reciting the names, ages of his relatives lost. And I was reminded by Scholastique Mukasonga, the Rwandan writer, when she was remembering her loved ones who were killed in the Rwandan genocide, and said that they are all killed, no one has remained. And this is exactly what happened to Tahir. Another father we talked to, when we talked to him over the phone, he was removing rubble with his own hands because bulldozers couldn't make it to the neighborhood. And there are no bulldozers can't even make it because there is no fuel for it to power bulldozers and to remove the rubble. So he was left with trying to remove the rubble and to excavate the shreds of his daughter. And then while we were with him on the phone, someone told him, "We found the toe of your little daughter." And he started kissing her toe. This is the only thing that was left to him from her. We talked to people who don't even have photographs to remember their loved ones with. They only have rubble because their phones, their laptops were ill or destroyed in airstrikes. We also talked to relatives of the family of Ados in a Zaytun neighborhood in Gaza City. 15 members of this family were killed in an Israeli strike on the first day of the bombings on the 7th of October, including a 12-year-old named Auni Dos. We did not realize at the time that Auni was a talented gamer and YouTuber. Only later did it emerge from his friends that one of his dreams was to have more than 100,000 subscribers on YouTube, which he'll never see. And these are just some of the faces. Right now, as we speak, people in Gaza have not been able to mourn or to grieve properly. There are no funerals for the dead. It's very hard. There are more than 1,000 bodies buried under the rubble, and people cannot get. Even when people manage to bury their loved ones, they just have bury remnants. And even when they share with us testimonies with the difficulty of getting to people, what they share with us almost are fragments of testimonies, not really testimonies, because of the devastation that they're living through. And because simply they say, we need time to at least think about mourning our loved ones, about reflecting on all that we've been going through. And with this incessant bombings and war, they don't even have time for that.
Badu, I wanted to ask you, what did your report find about Israeli military warning civilians before dropping these bombs or missile attacks? And also, Israel has claim that the people of Gaza should move out of northern Gaza into the south. But what are you finding about attacks in the south?
Budur. We're talking to Budur Hassan, who is Amnesty International researcher on Israel and the occupied Palestinian territories. We're having a bit of a sound issue. Amnesty International has published a new report, headline Damning Evidence of War Crimes as Israeli Attacks Wipe Out Entire Families in Gaza. Go ahead with what you were saying, Budur. Why don't we turn to a clip as we fix the sound with Budur Hassan. More than half of Gaza's population has been displaced by the Israeli assault. This is an 18-year-old Palestinian named Dima Alamdani. She'd fled to southern Gaza after Israel ordered Palestinians to leave their homes in the north. Much of her family died in an Israeli airstrike in Khan Yunis, where the family had sought temporary shelter.
I went to look for my mother, my father, and my siblings at the morgue. At first, they told me, come, see your mother. They didn't show me her face, but I recognized her from what she has on her feet. God bless her soul. I felt heartbroken. It was like a nightmare. They opened my father's coffin and had no signs of injuries, but he died. God bless his soul. I had a 16-year-old sister among the dead, and they wrote my name on her coffin since they thought it was me. Her body didn't have any signs of injuries, but maybe she died from internal injuries. They also showed me my little sister. She's in first grade, and they asked me, who is she? At first, I didn't recognize her due to all the cuts and burns on her face. Then they wrote her name on her coffin. I would have never thought that my family would end up like this. I felt heartbroken. It's a nightmare. I can't believe it until now that they're all dead. No one left.
But I think we have the connection straightened out with Badur Hassan. I was asking you, Badur, about the Israeli warnings to civilians before attacks, what you've learned about that, and also about the Israeli claim that the Palestinians of northern Gaza should move to the south for safety.
One, in the majority of cases that we did document, there were no warnings before the airstrike, so the families did not receive at all any warnings. Even in cases where there was advance warning, that advance warning was not effective because it was only informed to one of the family members, not to the entire family or the residents of the buildings, and it failed to meet the standards that require to make a warning effective with no clear time frame. With regards to the warning, the initial warning by the Israeli army issued on the 13th of October for all of the residents of north of Wadi Gaza to evacuate to south of Wadi Gaza, this amounts to a forced displacement simply because this is unfeasible for this community to be to leave. They cannot leave. Obviously, there are thousands of people with disabilities, wounded people. This number of people simply do not have the means and cannot leave. And then that was later followed by leaflets dropped by the Israeli army warning people to leave and then saying that anyone who chooses to stay north of Wadi Gaza will be considered accomplice in with armed terrorist organizations as per the words of the army, which is again amounts to collective punishment, fails to meet the principle of distinction because an entire area, hundreds of thousands, nearly a million people are treated just like an open fire zone, which also signals that the Israeli army intends to not distinguish between civilians and military targets because an entire area is transformed into one. And even if we suppose that many of these people were to leave, the situation in southern Gaza, and especially in Rafah and Khan Yunis, is particularly dire. The UNRWA-run schools are barely, they're not capable of dealing with the amount of people that the influx of people into South Gaza, in addition to the incessant bombardment also targeting the areas in southern Gaza, especially over the last 5 days. So these coercive conditions in which the Israeli army is trying to force people out, which again may amount to forced displacement, knowing that people in Gaza absolutely have nowhere safe from bombardment and airstrikes.
I wanted to ask you about the West Bank. That's where you are right now. Boudour, you're in Ramallah. In the occupied West Bank, health officials say at least 100 Palestinians have been killed by Israeli forces and armed settlers amidst mounting military raids and arrests. The Israeli human rights group B'Tselem has documented some of the attacks. In one video shared online, an Israeli settler, accompanied by an Israeli soldier, shoots a man at point-blank range. Major protests also across the West Bank have taken aim at the ruling Palestinian Authority, which has launched a violent crackdown on demonstrations. Last week, a 12-year-old Palestinian girl named Hassan Nasrallah was shot and killed by PA security forces during protests in Jenin following the deadly bombing of Gaza's Al-Ahli hospital. Still not clear what that explosion, who was responsible for that explosion. But, Boudour, if you can talk about what's happening also with Gazans who had work permits in the occupied West Bank, what has happened to them, and what's happening in the prisons where thousands of Palestinians are held.
Since the 7th of October, after the Hamas attack, thousands of workers from Gaza who had valid work permits to work in Israel and the occupied West Bank had their work permits unilaterally revoked, so they only could only learn about that through an application. And then Israeli forces started rounding them up and detaining them in military bases in cage-like conditions. One prisoner who was later released because he was actually a resident of the West Bank spoke about torture and other ill-treatment to which these workers are subjected. Families of workers who contacted Israeli human rights organizations, including Hamoked, Gisha, and Physicians for Human Rights, said that they have no clue where their family members are. So Israel now is arbitrarily detaining thousands of Palestinian workers, almost treating them like hostages, denying them due process, denying them meetings with lawyers. There is not even a hint of due process. In in addition to torture. All that in the context of increasing numbers of detentions. And before that, before all of this started, the number of Palestinians administratively detained without charges or trial has hit a 20-year high. And the number has doubled just since the 7th of October. And Palestinian families obviously have not been able to visit their loved ones in prison. In addition to that, the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, adopted an amendment that would authorize the Israeli prison authorities to not limit the number of people who can be detained in one cell, which has made the conditions of imprisonment absolutely dire and amounting to torture and other ill-treatment. All of that, Amy, as you said, in the context of increasing number of unlawful killings of Palestinians, including Palestinian children, mostly during protests. And many of these cases where state-supported settlers have also been rampaging across the West Bank, leading to unprecedented levels of forcible transfer in areas around Ramallah. And unfortunately, this level of pressure, of coercion, of oppression that Palestinians have been facing in the West Bank, which is